Good evening. I want to thank Claire for reading the word to us and also for her honesty. It really is a funny little story. And it actually doesn't make sense just by itself. This is a little snippet about four lepers who appear here in the Bible, are never given names. At the end of this story, they go off the scope, off the screen, and that's it. But their little story is part of a much bigger story. God, at the time of this story in 2 Kings, is getting his people's attention. The plan and purpose of God has always been to call to himself a great multitude of people who will know him and love him, serve him, know him. And God called the people of Israel as part of that plan. And for a lot of the time, as you probably know, they didn't pay attention. They ignored his command to love him only, and they fooled around with lots of other gods. They liked to mix worshiping the Lord in with piles of other stuff. God said, I love you so much, I'm not going to let you do that. And right before our story has been stories about the great prophet, first Elijah and then Elisha. Key messengers of God calling his people back to pay attention to him, to put him first. God has taken to extreme measures in the preceding chapter. He's called in a whole enemy kingdom, the Arameans from Damascus, and the northern kingdom of Samaria. The capital is surrounded now by an Aramean army. The city's got big walls. The Arameans can't just take it by assault, so they camp out there. The city's under siege. No food comes in. No people go out. Months go by until there's nothing left to eat. I mean, the story just before this one is a real story of hell on earth. It's a story of a woman who complains to the king of Israel. She says, my neighbor and I had a deal. My neighbor's let me down. We agreed that we'd eat my kid one day, and then the next day we'd eat hers. We ate mine, but then she hid hers. She didn't come through on the deal. She's complaining to the king. Society has broken down. Even the most basic, fundamental of human loves and commitments just isn't working. God is working hard on his people. And yet, in the middle of that, through the prophet, God says, I haven't forgotten you. I haven't abandoned you. All this has got a point to it. And I'm going to rescue. I'm going to rescue the whole town. I'm going to rescue my whole people. So you'll realize this was to get your attention. And that's what God's doing. This funny little story about four lepers is part of a bigger picture of what God's doing. And I think for us, so often, the four lepers didn't know that. They don't really see, perhaps, how their story fits in to God's bigger picture and God's bigger story. And I think that's so often the case with us, that the little stories of our lives and the things God's doing, sometimes we get glimpses, but so often we can forget that God has a big story. The story of creating a people for him out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, calling them together to know him, love him, and serve him. And our little stories fit into that. But these four guys were really unlikely heroes. I mean, the city under siege wasn't a wonderful place to be. And they weren't even in the city. They're in no man's land. They're sitting in the city gate, in the little sort of shelter on the outside. You see, actually, leprosy in the Bible is a broader term than it is nowadays. Nowadays, it has a very specific medical meaning. The term in Hebrew is a much broader one for really nasty skin problem. And these guys were rejects. They were not welcome in society because of their really awful skin problem. Now, I have a little sympathy with this because where we live in northern Mozambique, it's hot, it's humid, and somehow the combination of those two things with my skin just grows fungi of various colors and shapes. And I have spent months and months out of the last years with wonderful blotches growing on me. And my family will testify to you that they love me, but I'm not so huggable at that time. These four lepers were not huggable at all. They are outcasts. They do not fit in. And they are desperate. And they actually just get to sort of rock bottom, hopeless thinking. They say, well, look, here we are, stuck outside the city gate, in no man's land, starving. If we stay here, we're going to die. If we try to go into the city, there's no food for us in there. We're going to die. Well, a few hundred yards away, there's the enemy camp, all those soldiers. If we go over there, what's the worst thing that can happen? They could kill us. But since we're going to die anyway, that's no big deal, right? So they say, and they might even let us live. So these four men march off to the camp. Actually, there's a cute joke in Hebrew. It actually says they go off to attack the camp. You can't, it doesn't really work in English to put it in, but you know, how ironic can you get? Four sick rejects going off to attack the Aramaean camp that the whole Israelite army hasn't been able to do a thing about for months. They're really unlikely heroes. People who've hit rock bottom, and they never were loved or appreciated or welcomed by anybody anyway. And I think there's something about that for us. There's a spiritual reality that God can use us when we realize that we're not anybody. We don't have anything impressive to bring. We, in God's eyes, at living the way we should live, we're failures. It's called being sinners. The fancy Bible word for it is repentance, to come to the end of yourself and turn to God. They go off, and they discover that God does amazing things. God can really do miracles. They get to the Aramaean camp, and there's nobody there. A huge army has vanished. You know, it's great, the little conversation. First, we had the conversation of the four lepers. They say, we're going to die anyway. What can we do? And then there's the conversation of the Aramaeans. They've been sitting guarding for months, and suddenly, you know, something goes bump in the night, right? It's daytime. It's getting on toward evening, but there's this noise. And they say, uh-oh, what's that? Did you hear that? And they said, yeah, it's the sound of there's chariots and marching troops, and there it must be that the Israelites have hired in enemy kings to come and attack us from behind. The Hittites and the Egyptians. I mean, they're really exaggerating. And they just all panic. They pick up and they run. And they're so scared, They even leave their horses behind.
I mean, if I was running away, you know, and you got a pile of horses there, at least jump on one and go with that and go a little faster. But they leave all their horses, their dog. They were so panicked, they didn't stop to think. They ran.
Amazing. A huge army scared away by a noise. God does amazing things. God does miracles. I think sometimes we sort of say, well, all those miracles are in the Bible. And of course, the really big ones and the most wonderful ones are. The fact that Jesus died on the cross, Jesus rose from the dead, and because of that, people who are zeros before God, people who have failed, people who have sinned, people who've rejected all that God wanted for them, God can forgive them and make them new people. That is a miracle. That is wonderful. But, you know, it's one of those spiritual things that God does. But actually, God does miracles. He does unexpected and amazing things. He did it with the Aramaeans. He did it with Jesus. He's still doing it. Sometimes we see it and sometimes we don't. Just over 2 years ago in Mozambique, we were at a big church meeting with people from all over the country. And on the final day, it was Sunday, we've been camping out with our Land Rover. And that morning, our son Luke, who was 4, woke up and said, "I can't walk. My legs hurt." Well, you know, kids have lots of things that happen to them, so we weren't too concerned at first. Amazingly enough, because most of the time where we live, there are no doctors and very limited medical care where we live and our Bible translation work. At that meeting, because it was a big gathering, there was a doctor there, and this missionary doctor, actually during the offering, one of the nice things about African church services, they go on for 3, 4, 5 hours sometimes, but you're allowed to get up and walk around during them, you know? I mean, we have shorter services, but we make you sit still the whole time. That's the American tradition. But in Africa, you can move around. Anyway, so during the offering, this doctor examines my son. And I get, the church is so crowded that actually I had to be pulled through the window. It's, you know, someone tapped my shoulder through the window. And he gets me outside to talk, and he says, "This boy is so sick, you have to be at a hospital with an artificial breathing apparatus capability by nightfall." This is about 11 o'clock in the morning. Maybe 12. We were 12 hours drive minimum, one direction, from a hospital like that. 12 hours plus another direction from anything like that. What are we going to do? We're off in the bush of Africa. The doctor said, "Well, there's an airstrip over not too far away. I'll just see what's there." Meanwhile, I said, "Well, we don't know what's going on here." The doctor was afraid of a kind of paralysis that starts in the toes and creeps up. And felt afraid that there was a virus doing this. We said, "We'll just pack up and see how far we can drive, but there's no way we can get there in time." He came back 10 minutes later and said, "You won't believe this. There's a 22-seat plane sitting in that airstrip with 2 people on board, and they are flying direct to Johannesburg, South Africa, which has the best medical care probably in the African continent. And they'll give you a ride for free." I say, "Sure, we got the space." You know, when God does one of these miracles, you're so overwhelmed by it all, you don't even notice. So time spins, and because they were leaving in 15 minutes, we got on the plane, and we're up in the air, and Luke says to me, "You know, Daddy, I think my legs feel better now." Amazingly, we get to the hospital, and they check him out, and he was fine. We've never figured out why God did all that. You know, he could have healed him before we got off the ground. Except that he wanted to remind us that he's the kind of God who does miracles. He controls everything. He is Lord. He can make a whole army just panic and run off and leave all their wealth. He can do it.
The four lepers
are just stunned. In rags, starving. There's all the guys who've had all the food all the time. They've been sitting on the roads. They've been stealing from the farms. They walk into a tent, and there's food. They just eat. They drink. There's beautiful gold, silver clothes. They grab it. They say, "Wow, look at this." Take some. Go hide it somewhere. They go into the next tent. And it's just the same thing all over again. And there's hundreds and hundreds of these tents. Wow. It's all for us. And then right then and there, one of them says, "You know, we're not doing right. All of this just for us. There are people in that town over there dying. There are people who are going to starve to death tonight. If we sit on this, we're going to be in trouble. This is a day of good news we've got to go tell." Right then and there, they get up, they go back to the camp, back to the town, call the gatekeepers, and nobody in town believes them. The story goes on, the king and all the other officials were sure it was a trick. I said, "Nah, these guys can't, a whole army can't have vanished like that. They're out to get us. It's some trick." The news was so good that it was unbelievable. But those four men had the right idea. They realized that you can't just get blessing, God's goodness, God's wonderful, unexpected, overwhelming blessing. He pours it into your life, and you just can't keep it to yourself. It's not right. If we keep quiet, we are in big trouble. That's what they said to each other. There was a note of urgency about it. If we wait until daylight, we're going to be in trouble. Now, let's get going. This is too good to keep to ourselves. I think that basic motivation is a big part of why we, for the last 15 years, have lived in northern Mozambique and are involved in translating the Old Testament and in teaching ministries for people who speak Lomwe. We have been so blessed. We've got the whole Bible in English. We can read it. We've got, you know, there's a new translation that comes out every year or two. We've got study guides. We've got wonderful, gifted, able teachers, people who can help us understand what this means, what these words of life are really saying, and how that has an impact on our lives, and how God's love is supposed to turn us around. We've got so much resources, in the way of resources, so many blessings. And for Cindy and myself, there's this sense of, if we just keep it to ourselves, we're not doing right. It's such a privilege for the 2 million people who speak Lomwe to help them hear the whole word of God in their language, not keep to ourselves all this goodness and blessing. A couple years back, I was in a coastal area of Mozambique where there are many Muslims, called Pebani. And it was a sad visit for me. I was talking with people who had been refugees on an island off the coast. Mozambique has had years and years of civil war, and this was just at the time that the civil war was ending. During the war, 500 Christian people had fled from the mainland to this little offshore island because it was safer. The entire population of that island had been Muslim. For 5 years, these 500 Christians lived on that island. The war ended. Praise God. They're able to go home, go back to their farms, go back to their villages. I asked them, well, what happened on the island? They said, well, we used to have a church there. When we were there, when we were refugees, we always used to worship. And I said, what about now? Is there any Christians there? Is there a church there? I said, no. I said, really? I said, you lived there for 5 years and nobody became a Christian? There isn't at least a little group left there carrying on? They said, no. Well, you know, I said, well, what'd you do? I said, well, we had our church services and we never locked the doors. Anybody who wanted to come in could. Didn't you go out and tell anybody? Didn't you go visiting? Didn't you go explain? No. You know, that just broke my heart. How can, you know, 500 of God's people stay anywhere for 5 years and not have an impact? They were scared. They were intimidated. There may be a bunch of excuses. But they didn't get this message here. I'm very pleased to say that just last year, the churches we work with there in Mozambique have really had a burden for this area of Pebani and sent some of the first evangelists down there to work in the Muslim areas because they've repented. They've realized that, no, we're not doing right. This is a day of good news. God has blessed us who don't deserve to be blessed. God has done his miracles and we've seen them. To shut up and keep it to ourselves, we're not doing right. This story from 2 Kings is really the pattern of how God works so many times. He takes unlikely heroes, people who've hit bottom, and in his wonderful mercy and grace, he uses them. He does astonishing miracles. He shows his power and his goodness. And it's overwhelming, totally unexpected. And when we have seen it, we've seen God's goodness, we've seen his power, we can't keep it to ourselves. We've got to go share it. If we shut up, if we delay, we're in trouble. The people in Samaria were starving and dying. And it is true that people who do not know Jesus Christ die and live forever without God. It's called hell. There is an urgency. It is wrong to receive God's blessing and keep it. It's wonderful to receive God's blessing. There's not a note of criticism. These guys walk into the tent. They see the food. They see the drink. They see the gold. They see the clothes. It's great. Have a party. It's wonderful. But don't just keep it all to yourselves. That's the pattern of how God works. Using broken, unlikely people, showing astonishing power that we just have to share. They could have said so many other things. They could have said, those people back in that town, they didn't take care of us during this siege. They could have said, they've always rejected us anyway. We're not part of them. But they didn't. I said, no, God's too good. What he's done is too wonderful. And even people like us, God can use. May God help us hear his word and live it.